Hello, I am Robinson Cano. When I am not failing a PED test for the second time, I am listening to Nothing Worthwhile with Moody and Gru. Soy un completa idiota y muy malo haciendo trampa. Gracias.
Hi, I'm paid celebrity endorser Evan Moody for Miyagi Therapy. In 2014, I was on top of the world, one Academy Award, two Emmys, and a Grammy. But it all came crashing down. I didn't leave my 10-room Hollywood Hills mansion for weeks. I questioned my own very existence. I realized I couldn't handle all of this by myself. That's when I decided to seek help and work with a therapist. I needed help, and that's when I found Miyagi Therapy. In this time of COVID, I could speak to my therapist in a relaxed manner, virtually over the computer. As a matter of fact, let's take a listen at some of my recent Miyagi Therapy sessions. Hello, Mr. Miyagi. I just found out yesterday that I was switched at birth. I've never even met my true birth parents, and everything I ever known has been a complete lie.
Just remember, license never replace ear, eye, and brain.
Huh? And how about this one? Hello, Mr. Miyagi. Oh my God, I'm so glad to see you. My obsessive compulsive disorder has got me gripped with anxiety. I wash my hands repetitively until they bleed. I can't even make it out of the house.
Never put passion in front of principle. Even if win, you lose.
Sir, I do appreciate that, but I don't even know how that applies to my situation.
Not everything is as seen.
And just one more. Mr. Miyagi, oh my God, I just found out that my wife of 30 years is cheating on me with our personal trainer. He's 30 years younger than me, and my wife is moving out today. She's taking all my kids and all my possessions. Oh my God, I don't even know what to say about me.
Okay, lose to opponent. Must not lose to fear.
Fear? What the fuck are you talking about? I'm paying you $300 an hour for this shit. I ought to smack you.
That Miyagi dream.
And we are back. All right, Andrew, let's get back to the past. Before we get to Karate Kid, the best of the rest, let us scale back to our last podcast. It was indeed the sequel to the sequel. It was Karate Kid Part 3. It was a fun one with lots of spirited debate. Gru, we discussed the following in regards to the Karate Kid Part 3, casting of the third film, production of Karate Kid Part 3, highlighting the two big additions to the Kid franchise, actors Robin Lively and Thomas Ian Griffith, the stupendous, wonderful, over-the-top plot of Karate Kid Part 3, commercial critical reaction to the film, and we even talked about, is Kid Part 3 the best or the worst of the franchise so far? Gru, despite having more holes than a chunk of Swiss cheese, there was a lot of enjoyable elements to the movie. I enjoyed this turn and a deeper look into the relation between Daniel and Mr. Miyagi. Gru loved the over-the-top portrayal of Terry Silver by Thomas Ian Griffith. While we both enjoyed the movie, there was a realization that it was probably not a high-quality film. I enjoyed it, but really for me, I felt like I was more tolerating it. While I think it's fair to say that Gru enjoyed the ridiculous over-the-topness of the movie, Andrew, let's get to it. Oh, here we go. Gru, the viewer email came in fast and quick, and it was charged up. Gru, you know it. Are you ready? It's time for viewer mail.
Letters. We got your letters. We got your letters every day.
Thank you, Gru. Let's highlight our Nothing Worthwhile Facebook fan page. Please hit us up at www.facebook.com/nothingworthwhile1985. A lot of comments. Let's get to it. Not sure why, but I really enjoyed the IMDb recall of Robin Lively. I'd like to go on record and say it was not IMDb of Robin Lively. Let's see here. The best scenes all involve Terry Silver. The scene at Cobra Kai where he is training Daniel is the best scene in the movie. The fight scene at Cobra Kai, that was lots of fun. Did you come to teach or to be taught? How was the writing so good for Terry Silver and weak for others? Gru, your brother had a lot of comments there. Terry Silver, the fight scene, any final thoughts to wrap that up?
I don't think it was the writing. I think Terry Silver ate up the screen. I think Thomas Ian Griffith took what he was given and made lemonade out of lemons, because it really is not a well-written movie, and every part of it, every plot point is just ridiculous. But he makes it work, because like I talked about, before, Daniel and Miyagi are not that much fun to watch in this movie. Terry kind of brings it together, and a lot of, especially the younger Cobra Kai fans who are discovering the Karate Kid movies now, they all seem to love Terry Silver. Like, everybody loves a good villain, and him, putting him with Kreese was just a ball to watch. So it's like, to summarize Karate Kid 3, it's a bad movie, but I love to watch it. Like, I mean, that's really all I can say that hasn't been said.
I will agree with your comments for the most part. I would attribute it to Griffith's performance, not the material. But I do say that karate fight is so gosh darn awful when they're in the Cobra Kai dojo. It's just,
oh yeah, but it's fun to watch. That's the thing. It's ridiculous and it's silly and it's badly choreographed, but it's fun to watch because of the characters involved. Like, if you don't hate Terry Silver, or if you don't love to hate Terry Silver, then you're not going to like the movie. He is the glue for everything. So like my brother said, like Steven said, when he's on the screen, you're buying it even though you're not really buying it. You know what I mean?
Steven goes on to criticize us for talking about wrestling. So I'll take that little pivot. We texted about the Goldberg Chronicle on WWE Network. But let me just ask you real quick. Early rumors that they're going to go back to Roman Reigns versus Goldberg at WrestleMania as one of the main events. Just give the fans a little taste, your thoughts off the top, if they go back to Goldberg and Roman Reigns.
One word, why?
Yeah, me too. Me too.
That's all I have to say. Me too.
Actually, I feel like they blew it last year when they had Strowman basically wrap up Goldberg in 3 minutes. So now you're going to put, quote unquote, a better wrestler in front of Goldberg,
yeah,
who's a year older?
Why? Why? Is it because The Rock said no to this year, but yes to next year?
No, well, I think from what I read, the WWE and The Rock said, if we're going to do it, let's do it in LA. And I don't know. I actually have no interest in seeing Roman Reigns versus Goldberg.
But me neither.
I'll probably go to it because apparently Vince is a fan of and thinks Goldberg's money, which.
Well, he is.
May or may not be seen.
No, he is.
All right.
He is money, but we don't like it.
Okay. I agree about not liking Daniel for certain parts of the movie, just plain stupid to spend his college money on the bonsai store. Plus, the way he's training. He stops for water while running with Jessica. I think he's invading Mr. Miyagi's space as buying the store, even though they live together. Response to the fan comments there.
Yeah, he's kind of obnoxious in this one.
We talked about it. I never saw Daniel as annoying in this film. Goody Two Shoes, preachy perhaps, but I never found him to be annoying, even in Karate Kid 3.
Maybe annoying is the wrong word. Just like you want to just shake him and say, "What the fuck are you doing?" Like,
but as I said in the last podcast, he's going into college. We know he's probably 50 when he's filming the movie, but there was a really likable elements to his performance. He knows he's doing the wrong thing. He says in the movie, "I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe I'm training with this guy." And I just, that part, I've felt the same way. Like, I've made conscious bad decisions. And that actually, for a movie that's, the plot points are so stupidly ridiculous.
That's why. That's why it doesn't, that's why, because by then, the whole thing is so ridiculous, you buy nothing. He has literally nothing to gain by fighting in this tournament. And my question is, how can somebody be going into college and still be under 18?
Like, we talked about it. It is possible, because I was.
It is? All right. Okay, fair enough. But either way, and, you know, the shortcuts that the movie takes with, oh, now he doesn't have to fight anybody except in the finals, that's a cop-out, you know, just to keep things moving. It's just like, it's lazy movie making. They just needed a reason to get him into another adventure. And a revenge story, like with Kreese and Silver, it just... The story doesn't work. It's just the only thing you're looking for is something fresh. And that's what Thomas Ian Griffith brings to it. Freshness.
Gru, we both got criticized. Apparently we have said that The Karate Kid is a stroke of genius. We are asked, what makes it so genius? I love it. It's a classic, but I do not think it's a genius. What's so genius about it?
That they didn't make the hero perfect. They recognized his flaws. They didn't make the villain a super villain. It was a real teenage angst story that could happen in any town, in any state, in any country in the world. And it was so real. And there was just something beautiful and special about the relationship he had with Mr. Miyagi. That, I mean, just how is it genius? Everybody knows the name Mr. Miyagi. You know, like, that's just to create that character alone is a work of genius. And when I say genius, I mean it's a team effort. It's the writing, it's the casting, it's the directing, it's the music, it's everything. Rolled into one, it is a work of absolute genius that you walk away from it absolute feeling like $1 million, maybe with even some tears in your eyes. Still to this day, every now and then when I watch it, you know, I get a little verklempt, because it is so good. When you see something so good, that's what genius is. It's something bigger than life. And that's what that movie is. It's become legendary. So, yes, that's
when we did, I think, I don't know if it was a top 5 or top 10 movie podcast, I really thought about movies that moved me. When I left the theater and I was like, wow, I don't want to sound again douchey, but, like, I'm changed. And Karate Kid, I remember, of course, I was young, but I walked out of that theater and I'm doing the crane pose, and I just... Hard for me to sort of encompass or summarize in a couple of sentences. You did a great job, but I walked out of that theater and I knew I saw something special. And I think it's fair to say it was a stroke of genius.
Yes.
The you know, I always say this about sports with teams. It's so hard to win. It's a combination of drafting and salary and you know, when you hit on a movie like that, Gru, you were in the movie business. More often than not, they're flops. And when you get that one time where the casting and the direction and everything sort of just hits, it's a wonderful thing. And so I do think it's a fair thing to say Karate Kid was a stroke of genius.
Yeah, and my brother and I, we always talk about, we have our list of, like, perfect movies. And what we mean by that is not necessarily our favorite movies ever, but movies that you would not change a thing. Every single second of screen time means something. The Karate Kid is one of those. You don't want to change one thing about it. There's literally no moment in that movie that I would film differently or write differently or act differently. It's perfect in that way. That's genius. Just like, you know, another one that I think of sometimes is City Slickers. Okay, regardless of, you know, what you think of it, like, to me, that's another perfect movie that I wouldn't change a thing. To me, to create one of those kind of movies is genius. That's why The Karate Kid is genius, because there's no flaws.
You know which one is for me?
Uh-oh. What?
the James Cameron helmed Piranha 2.
He didn't direct that, did he? Really?
Yes. I listened to Starnthology on the way home. It was his interview.
Wow.
That was like his first big, break.
That's what these guys have to do. You know, like the guy who did Shawshank Redemption before that, you know, like his break was he directed a remake of The Blob. Like this is seriously, that's how they pay their dues, man. That's what they got to do. You know?
Last question. Why didn't Barnes punch Daniel while he was doing all those hand motions at the end? Why was he hesitant? That was when Daniel was doing his kata. And any thoughts?
Because the script said not to.
That's what I wrote. I wrote, why? Because it's a fucking movie. Nothing makes sense here.
Yeah.
It's not well done movie.
And to put a cap on it, in no world would Daniel beat that guy. The movie made that guy into someone who could not be beaten by someone like Daniel. You could believe that Daniel beat Johnny in the first one the way he did. Okay? But this guy was just ridiculous. You know?
Yeah, like you said, he got, like, you know, Daniel got absolutely not one ounce of offense in it.
Zero until the very end. And that's, you know, and the same thing happens. He wins and then he hugs Mr. Miyagi, but you're not feeling anything even remotely close to what you felt when the same thing happened two movies earlier. Right?
I absolutely agree. Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's the problem. And like the way, like if you compare it to like the Rockies difference, for whatever reason, every time Rocky wins in the end, you feel like you won with him. And you believe it and you love it and you're emotional. It just, cause the shit works. And here it just didn't. But it's still fun to watch. Actually, I still enjoy watching it. I don't know why.
I actually agree with that because there are Rocky movies that I don't, you know, I don't like Rocky IV, but when he wins, I get up and I cheer just like everybody else. Yeah.
In Karate Kid 3, you cheer because it's over, you know? But again, it's silly because I still do enjoy watching the movie. I don't, it's one of those unexplained phenomena that I can't figure out. You know?
Gru, you know what's an unexplained phenomena?
Let me guess. Does it start with N and end with U?
You know it. It's New Year, Tom. Come on. Swing those hips. New you. Come on, Gru. You take it now. All the way in Florida.
I'm taking it. Yeah. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of
Sing it, brother.
This reminds me of you. This reminds me of that Dr. Evil and the Mini-Me singing the Hard Knock Life in the third Austin Powers when they're in prison. You remember?
Yeah, speaking of diminishing returns, boy, that franchise. Whatever happened to Mike Myers? He should go to New U Life Center. He needs some Botox.
Yeah, probably.
So listen, I just, you know, look, guys, girls, I'm post-COVID. I haven't worked out in a while. I'm a big hairy mess. I mean, I haven't personally groomed. I got to go to New U. I got to get some Botox.
Drinking your meals through a straw.
Let me tell you something, Gru. When I take my clothes off and I look in the mirror, I look like Ron Jeremy. I'm just a big hairy, just disgusting mess.
I don't know what's wrong with that, actually, because Ron did pretty well. He's not doing so well right now, but
no, didn't he get like literally like 50 sexual harassment indictments in California?
Yes, that's like saying water's wet. I mean, he's a porn he's a porn star. I mean, Jesus. Well, what do you expect?
I don't know. I guess he really maybe was a bad guy in his personal life or something like that.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But tell me what New You would do for someone like that. Someone who's just lost and feeling lost in that big, hairy, disgusting whatever.
Well, first of all, right, if you need to lose weight, they're going to get you on a medical weight loss. Right, they're going to customize your diet. They'll do meal planning. They'll do hormone balancing, which really does help a lot of people. They'll do, you know, you want to spruce up your look, Botox, fillers, probably PDL threads. They'll spruce you up, and it's all non-invasive. And Dr. Cynthia is very, very careful. When I go there, she'll say, little pinch, get the shot, and off I go. So, look, Guru, it's cold out. We got to look ahead for the summer, spring and summer months. You want to look and feel your best. New You Life Center understands that it's a matter of making time and the right place to do it safely and effectively. They got all the COVID PPE. You got to go in. You got to take your temperature. You got to, I don't even know. You got the hand sanitizers. You got to strip down and get.
Now, do they do the temperature like from behind like we used to do in the old days?
Yeah, like rectally.
Yes.
Like my mom, she'd lay me down.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm telling
you. And that was 2 weeks ago in Florida, right?
I'm telling you. You think this is a joke, but my mom would lay me on the bed. She'd get that thermometer, and she would put, I'm not talking about a little, like a huge, massive amount of Vaseline, and just jam it in my butthole. It would be painful.
Would she put like James Taylor on the radio just to like calm you down?
No, they didn't know music. I was the one who listened to music. My mother didn't listen to music. I mean, I was the one that listened to like, you know.
Well, she'd put on like Frank Sinatra, like, how lucky can one guy be? I kissed her. Let's go.
No, they like the doo-wop stuff.
Oh.
I mean, do your folks listen to that stuff? Like my folks watch like public television to see the platters come out and lip sync, you know.
No,
my mom is
she was a Beatles fan. My dad was never into rock and roll. He liked the standards. He liked Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Streisand. He liked show tunes, you know, still does. He plays them on the piano all the time. So he wasn't a rock and roll guy. My mom limited, although they do like Billy Joel, they pretty much limited to themselves to, you know, the Beatles and stop there.
They had Billy Joel was on the Beatles channel. They did an interview with him.
Really?
I caught it maybe a day or two ago. It was pretty interesting.
Did he say what happens when you die?
No, he talked about the Beatles' influence, and they talked about how, I guess, the Beatles had 12 albums and Billy Joel had 12 albums.
But how would New You Life Center help a guy like Billy Joel?
Billy Joel needs a lot of help.
Yeah.
Billy Joel is in a funk for sure.
Yeah.
He's in a creative funk. So look, if he needs a little pick me up, they could do like a vitamin boost, a shot right in the tush.
Nice.
They can give him some Botox and some fillers to fill out that face. You know, when he looks up into the crowd, he goes, "Hi, Dad. Hi, Dad." And he does that for the next 15 cities. And I'm like, wait a second. The show that I saw in Arizona is exactly, except for maybe two songs, the show that I saw in Florida and then when I saw in New York. Come on, Billy.
And we still fork over another $150.
Yeah, well, listen, I think everybody, including Billy Joel, should go to New You Life Center. Give them a call, 602-274-0068, or hit them up on their website. That's www.newyoulifecenter.com. Check out that website. A lot of photos of Marie, Dr. Cynthia, all their patients, plumped up lips and cheeks, slimmed down bellies, smoothed out skin, scars that are healed up, fully restored hairlines. They're doing all that COVID PPE. Tell Marie and Dr. Cynthia that Moody and Groove sent you and get 15% off your first service. That's 15% off. Thank you.
No.
New You.
All right.
All right, Andrew. You know what is up next?
Yes, indeed.
It's the next Karate Kid. So, Gru, when I was thinking about the next Karate Kid, I thought about why no Ralph Macchio? And so, according to IMDb, it's presumed that Daniel LaRusso had gone away to college. Reportedly, at the time, Macchio was 33 years old, too old to reprise his role as the Karate Kid. He publicly stated that he was not interested in becoming the Sylvester Stallone of Karate Kid movies. Hold your thought for a second. Gru, let's say in a perfect world, there may have been a quality sequel here with Daniel LaRusso, could you have envisioned after three another Karate Kid movie with Ralph Macchio, Daniel LaRusso, or was it time to move on?
Definitely time to move on. Yeah, I mean, that there's not much more to say. But, you know, you got to remember, I mean, I guess assume that Daniel went off to college, but you got to remember this movie doesn't take place in California. For some reason, I forgot, it's like a World War II reunion thing in, they're in Boston, I think, or Massachusetts.
Yes, they're in Boston, Mass.
Yeah, so, you know, Daniel's probably getting his ass kicked somewhere in the streets of Reseda while his beloved Mr. Miyagi is making breakfast for a 20-year-old really smoking hot Hillary Swank.
Could they have done? I mean, here's an idea for a sequel. Daniel is I forget what the word is, but he's trying to get into a fraternity, and maybe they're hazing him like downstairs in the basement. They're making him drink beer, and like, you know, he's about to like throw up and die, and then Mr. Miyagi karate kicks the fraternity house door, and start throwing Biff and Tim into the beer pong wall or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, for the life of me, I couldn't. I can't, you know, I consider myself to be somewhat of a creative person, but I can't, yes. I can't think of where that kid would go karate wise and Miyagi wise after that. So obviously we got an answer where he'd be 35 years later, but we'll get to that in due time.
So, Gru, the writing is on the wall here. Literally, this is the first Karate Kid movie not to be written by Robert Mark Kamen. John G. Avildsen, who was originally slated to direct the fourth Karate Kid, but dropped out in order to make 8 Seconds. So, Gru, when you see that as a film goer, are you thinking diminished returns here?
To me, I remember when this came out. I remember when I even heard the idea of it, I rejected it on principle, like. Let it die or let it go away. Like, why are they even doing this? Even if Avildsen did direct it, even if the writer was coming back, even if all the stars were aligned, you know, without the Karate Kid, there's no Karate Kid. So, you know, if Macchio was in it, I would have been interested. I would have been skeptical. But the fact that they were going in this direction, I never saw the movie until at least 15 or 16 years after it came out. I had zero interest in it, no matter who the movie makers were.
Okay. Well, let's take a real quick look at the cast. Again, Noriyuki Pat Morita as Mr. Miyagi, Hilary Swank as Julie Pierce, you know, Michael Ironside as Colonel Paul Dugan, Constance
there's
Towers.
There's a movie name if I ever heard. Colonel Paul Dugan.
Yeah. Chris Conrad is Eric McGowan. Walter Goggins, a very young Walter Goggins.
I didn't notice that. I saw that, yeah.
Yes, very young Walter Goggins. And it's just funny to see him in that role, and knowing what the kind of roles he's played later on in his career.
Yep.
Very talented actor. Always enjoy his stuff. And just to say, you were Frank Welker as Angel the Hawk, the voice. It was going to be Billy West, but it went to Frank Welker.
Billy West asked for too much money.
All right, everybody, take a deep breath. Take 2 aspirin. Let's go over the plot fairly quickly on the next Karate Kid. As Gru said, Mr. Miyagi traveled to Boston, Massachusetts to attend a commendation for Japanese-American soldiers who fought in the 442nd Regimental Combat Team during World War II. Mr. Miyagi meets Louisa Pierce, the widow of his commanding officer and Lieutenant Jack Pierce. At Pierce's home, they catch up on old time and war stories. And I think one of the things I wrote right off the top, Gru, it's kind of like a somber tone when the movie opens. There's no montage.
Right.
It looks like it's not going to be a happy film.
Well, I mean, it's. I guess. I mean, it actually starts very syrupy to me, like with the birds flying and the marching band. They're already there. Like it is kind of upbeat. It's almost too upbeat. There's no stakes, And it's just like, and there is room for a Miyagi story. You know, like if you were telling me that they were going to make a movie about just Miyagi, you know, I mean, this obviously reeks of we couldn't get Machio, but we're going to make the movie anyway. So let's insert, oh, we'll go with a girl and we'll find the 90210 now girl. You know, I think that's what she was on at the time. And it's just I didn't find it to be downbeat at all. I found it to be different. And that doesn't have to be a bad thing, but in this case, it didn't work from the get go. You could tell that the production value was way down.
Oh, like, absolutely!
Yeah,
it almost looks like a television movie.
Yes,
when it opens.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Okay. Well, Gru, Miyagi is introduced to Pierce's granddaughter Julie, who's a high school teen struggling with anger issues due to her parents' death. In a car accident, she's a bad girl, Andy.
Yeah.
She says hi to Miyagi and just moves on. And of course, the grandmother starts airing out all the dirty laundry about the granddaughter right in front of, you know, Miyagi and the kid. So
she should at that point. I remember when I saw it, you know, years later, I don't know if you'll get this or anybody else will get this, but at that time during that scene, I wanted literally Rick Moranis to come onto the screen in his dark helmet and turn and be like, everybody got that? Like the exposition joke. Remember from Spaceballs when he's like, when we capture the princess, then we kidnap her and we extort the heir from there, blah, 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 blah. And then Moranis turns to the camera. He's like, you got that? Like that's what I was waiting for. Like, okay, here's where this stranger is going to come and explain the entire plot to us.
Yeah, like I just was shocked that any normal adult would always probably try to bring that behind closed doors and to just all of a sudden you haven't seen some, you know, war colleague of your deceased husband for years and then all of a sudden you just start. Oh, my granddaughter. You know,
yeah, it's a movie trick. It's weak writing. It's exposition just to get us into the plot. And they do that actually a little bit, and we'll touch on that. They do that in the Karate Kid remake in a couple spots, which bothered me. And we'll get to that. But, yeah, that's all this is. Because once the grandmother does this, and then it's me, she leaves and she's gone for the whole movie, right?
Yes.
So yeah, the person who told us everything we needed to know. Okay, done my job. Here, sign the check. All right, I'm out of here. Have fun, guys.
So you bring up a great point. So before we get to that, she goes at night on top of the school. There's an injured hawk. It kind of has like a dirty Band-Aid on its wing, so we know it's injured. Insert joke. Thank you. But Gru's right. Miyagi all of a sudden basically says, you go to my house. I'll watch your struggling granddaughter. And I wrote, I mean, I felt like it was the most laughable plot point ever in a movie. Like,
and creepy as
grandmother
hell.
And granddaughter are strange. So long lost, solemn Asian friend takes care of tough girl, you know. And he like, what does he do? He offers to make peace by cooking her a tempura and sushi dinner.
Yeah.
I mean, give me some realism. I mean, you just met this family and you're like, oh, you go stay at my house. I'll watch your kid.
Yeah. I mean, I don't need to say anything.
Well,
that's what it is.
Thank you, Andy. Way to fill in those missing holes on this podcast. Are we wasting our time just breaking down this ridiculous movie? We go to school, and Julie Hillary Swank meets and befriends Eric McGowan, who is a teenage security guard in training and a pledge for the shady school security fraternity, the Alpha Elite, which I said looks like a prepubescent version of the Expendables.
Yes, yes.
Expendables.
Yes, those guys in the when he's training them on the soccer field or the football field, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's like a really aggressive safety patrol. It's really weird. I don't even know. And then, you know, Hilary Swank walks around in a very nice belly shirt, which I did enjoy. I mean,
and
I
they're not shy about showing like those things sticking out of the thing and the, you know, like, and I had to, before I you know, I had to look it up to see how old she was when she was making this movie.
And how old was she?
20. So I feel better.
Well, that's pretty young.
No, but I was hoping that I wasn't staring at the breasts of a 16-year-old girl, you know, because.
Well, wait a second.
That would be wrong.
Because I thought when you said sticking out, I thought you meant her arms.
Yeah, hey! That's exactly what you thought. No, she was 20 when she made it. So that's why they weren't shy about showing her in her bra. And, you know, of course that they need that sitcom, you know, moment when Miyagi walks in on her.
Well, I gotta be honest with you. You did say that Macho chunked up for Kid 3. I mean, and he showed a lot of some male breast meat in that movie as well.
Well,
quite honestly.
Yeah, a little bit.
Actually, they said the reason why Ralph Macchio couldn't be in the next Karate Kid, he was busy on the treadmill.
Actually, he was – well, where was he at that point? I know he had done My Cousin Vinny. This was 94, I think.
I believe it was 94.
Yeah, so he had already done My Cousin Vinny a couple of years earlier, and then he disappeared for a while. Like, I don't remember seeing much of him until Beer League.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah.
So there was really – there wasn't much of a reason.
He was great in Beer League.
Yeah, he was. There wasn't – and he's a terrific actor, he always gives it his all, but, like, I see no reason why he couldn't have just said, you know what? I got nothing else going on. Let's just go back to the well, you know. But I guess he's got integrity, unlike us.
Well, Greer, we meet Michael Ironside as Colonel Paul Dugan, who's the local ROTC commander, who clearly has more power than the school principal.
Clearly.
This ROTC group, the security group, they're taught to enforce the school rules, mostly by using physical force, as taught by Paul Dugan. And again, we have the scene where Miyagi walks over to the overly macho teen leader who's espousing a violent philosophy, being Michael Ironside's character. He beats up Eric. By the way, the actors who play these high school kids, they look like they're 30.
Yeah.
They look way too old. And the guy is like literally he's jacked. These kids are huge.
Yeah.
Very muscular. The toughest and strongest and most aggressive student is the short fuse Ned Randall, who I said looks like a very jacked Ben Stiller.
Ned Randall. Wait, yes. That's his character's name?
Ned Randall, yes.
Nothing
yes,
says
yes.
tough guy, badass, like Ned.
Well, of course, Ned makes unwanted sexual advances on Julie. Julie confronts Eric and asks him if he will tell on Angel, the hawk. He refuses to answer, so he stays in his car and goes off. Eric promises Julie he will not tell anyone about the hawk. Miyagi walks in at the house, and we get a bra shot of the house. And of course, Miyagi feigns embarrassment and the libido of young teens.
Yeah, this look, I'm all for – you know, Hillary Swank in a bra, but this is as sitcom-y as it gets. And to see, actually, I'm going to stop here because this is my biggest issue with this movie is that they turned Miyagi into a caricature. They took an Academy Award nominated character and made him into a cartoon with that wasn't part of the Karate Kid actual cartoon. And that's probably what I hate most about this movie is that they make Miyagi into you can't take him seriously in this. And Pat Morita gives it his all, but when the script isn't there, you know, he couldn't pull off a Thomas Ian Griffith, you know.
The karate piece comes in because Julie survives almost being hit by a car by jumping into what we call apparently a tiger position. And
didn't she know some karate before this, before all this?
Yes. Yeah, of course. They all do. They all do, right?
Yeah.
She reveals that she was taught karate by her father, who learned from her grandfather, who apparently was Miyagi's student.
Right there. I'm sorry to interrupt, but right there, because these sequels, you're going to compare them to the ones that came before. And if you remember about the first Karate Kid, we know nothing about Daniel's father. do we? Not a thing.
No.
Yet we don't need to, because we can already tell that something bad has happened. Because it's unwritten and unsaid, but the way the movie the way that first movie unfolds, we know that there's been pain. Here, they have to tell us. They have to tell us that Julie's father is still in her mind and haunting her, and you know, things that have happened before. It's like it's treating the audience like idiots. And that's what the first Karate Kid refused to do. And this one does it constantly.
Well, Miyagi will teach Julie karate. What's the payment for the lessons? School homework. And she's not going to wax any cars or paint any fences, Gru. However, Miyagi does a job as a local headhunter and gets her a babysitting job across the street. And chaos ensues.
I love how you put that. Right out of a local headhunter.
We got a montage.
Yeah.
We got a montage.
Yeah.
The kids are shooting Nerf balls at her and, you know, water balloons and fun and merriment.
What was the song? It wasn't Cruel Summer. It was Cool Summer, I think. That's what they called it.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I'm kidding.
I have no idea. Let's see. Julie sneaks out at night and while trying to feed Angel the hawk. She's detected by the Alpha Elite, who chase her through the school. As I noted, one of which being a very, very young Walter Goggins. She hides into the cafeteria until Ned finds her. She hits the fire alarm and she runs outside. She's arrested by the local police and gets suspended for 2 weeks by Dugan.
I have a question.
Let's see here.
I have a question, because I've seen the movie now 2 times. And I still don't really know what threat this 20-year-old, or in the movie, I guess she's 16, this 16-year-old girl is to these badass, you know, ROTC guys. Like, why are they picking on
her? That's a good point, because I don't think she's a threat, but, I mean, she's if you really want to get to the letter, she's trespassing on school grounds at night. School's closed. So
right,
I mean,
but even before then, they're giving her a hard time.
Well, maybe she's I don't know. She's a roughneck. Maybe she's a little bit of a.
Is it
she
just
doesn't follow the rules?
Or maybe it's just in
she
the
doesn't
script.
Doesn't get in line. She doesn't listen to adult directions.
She's not savvy.
So listen, she gets suspended. By the way, by Dugan. Not the principal.
Not the principal.
That's another thing that annoyed me. Principal is a big pussy in this movie. He's letting this like head of security run the deal.
Right.
Now here's where Miyagi's got to get Julie back in line. So he takes Julie to a Buddhist monastery to teach her the true ways of karate and how to handle her anger issues.
And they go bowling.
Along the way, she learns lessons about balance, coordination, awareness, respect for life, all of which apparently by hopping and kicking from one large rock to another, Andrew. Buddhist monastery.
Sorry, I remember this, like, what, like...
along the way, she'll save a hawk, but she'll apparently kill a cockroach. She's shunned by the monastery for her egregious actions. Miyagi goes on a long diatribe about respecting nature
and all
life.
Of a sudden these monks start talking.
Yeah, well, it's the new green movement, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, she killed a cockroach and now she's being shunned like she's like Exxon.
Yeah, exactly.
She listens, she saves the grasshopper, Gru, and presents it to the monks.
Thank God.
Who now approve of her. And I guess now she's ready for Miyagi's unorthodox training, which focuses on all of her senses. She befriends several of the monks, and then they have apparently a line dance to the Cranberry song Dreams.
Yep.
Which I wanted to use to open and us to do a, you know, it's like a cute scene, but I'm like, it's so ridiculous. And one of the monks looks like a guy I've seen in like 8 or 9 movies. Those the chubby.
Yeah,
one
I know who you're talking about. I didn't look him up. I know who you're talking about. When do they go
bowling? So The monks host a birthday party for her.
Oh my God.
Give her a cake. And we have a scene in which Mr. Miyagi catches an arrow in mid-flight in a demonstration of what is apparently called Zen archery. And Andrew, I wrote, and I want to throw it to you, in probably one of the least believable scenes of all time, an old man is going to grab an arrow in mid-flight. Who wrote this shit?
Evidently the same guy who wrote Ernest Saves Christmas. Because that I'm picturing like Jim Varney in the Miyagi role right now. That's what this is to me. If I'm reading this on paper, I'm like, I'm just constantly saying what?
And so then the monks apparently go with Miyagi and Julie back to Boston, and then we have a wacky scene in which they go to the local bowling alley and they're sort of confronted by sort of like a bunch of rednecks, but by the end of the night, they're all pals bowling and everyone's getting along.
And I have a bone to pick with this scene because, as you know, I am, as of last Wednesday, I am a Tri-County Bowling Championship coach.
Okay, congratulations.
Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. My team, I'm the head varsity bowling coach at my beloved school, and I am a champion. So I saw something that really bothered me in this movie. There is a moment where the monk puts the ball in the gutter and magically makes it come out of the gutter and bowls a strike. That's a very touching scene, isn't it? Magical, right? You remember?
Yes.
That's an illegal shot. That's a gutter ball. Once the ball is in the gutter, even if it pops out and hits a pin, it's still a zero. So this movie is fake news.
Right, but you know that monks have special powers like elves and fairies. And
yes.
They can control bowling balls
but
with their
powers
mind.
Or no powers, as I said, even if the ball, once the ball's in the gutter, okay, even if it comes out and hits the pins, it's still a gutter ball. Legally. Those are the bowling rules. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to burst your bubble.
Well,
but
okay.
That monk did not bowl a strike. And I want it fixed in the director's cut. I want it fixed.
Well, Gru, even more ridiculousness, upon returning back to school, Julie discovers that Angel was found by Ned, who reported her to animal control. Miyagi assists Julie in releasing the bird back to the wild, but he's not going to fly away right away because his wing is still injured.
Oh.
So what does Mr. Miyagi do?
Does he do this?
Got it, Andy. Pain suppression and from the first film and voila. He flies away. Angel is fine.
I think the ASPCA would have a problem with that, but we won't go with, you know, we won't go there.
I hope he washed his hands after that scene.
Probably not.
So we got the school prom. Miyagi teaches Julie how to dance and purchases her a dress. I mean, this guy is really going out of his way for a complete stranger.
Was there a line in there where she said, where'd she learn how to dance? Father teach? I don't think so. That would have worked there.
I don't know.
That would have worked there.
She did say, where's your hands? And he said, in between two pillows.
those aren't pillows.
Those are. Look, there's a big schmoz.
Speaking of pillows, she was looking good in that prom dress.
Mm.
I'm in trouble.
Alpha Elite bungee jump into the prom because that's what most, you know, security forces do at a high school prom. They smash, Eric, you know, is now on the good side. They smash his car windows.
And the principal's okay with all this, right?
What's that?
The principal's okay with all this, right?
Apparently, they fight at the docks.
Is this the principal from Porky's? Remember the principal from Porky's?
It's been a long time since
I've
seen
that. All right, we'll go, then I'll save that
one. I do remember when they go to the docks, it looked like a scene out of The Warriors. Like it was like that, ice mist. It was just, it looked so gimmicky.
It
was out of like a Genesis or a Eric Clapton late 80s music video, you know. Well, we know that they severely beat Eric, who's saved by Julie Miyagi. And Ned tries to grab Julie, but she challenges him to a fight. She holds her own using the karate that she has learned. Even when Ned throws sand in her face, Julie defeats Ned and actually torches him with a front kick and turns her back on him. And, of course, then Dugan bullies the rest of the group to continue to fight, but they refuse. Miyagi challenges Dugan to a fight and wins in what I've called the least interesting final fight of all time, leaving the Alpha Elite disappointed in their instructor. A quick callback to Karate Kid 2 with a blow of breath to the face. And, of course, the film ends with now Angel flying freely above the water, a la Mutual of Omaha.
And thus ends the surgical procedure that
it's like
the
strangely
next
new age karate, the next Karate Kid, perhaps in a weird
maybe
way.
But I you know, it's, I guess my biggest problem with this movie, and there are a lot of them, but my biggest one is there's not one single original idea in the whole thing. It's just, it's like Frankenstein. It's like taking pieces of a million other movies and putting them together and, coming up with something that's much, much less than the sum of its parts. And it's just like one original idea would have been, what's his name? Eric, her friend? Cause see, that's another thing. And I know I go off on tangents, but I've seen the movie twice, and I watched it again a couple weeks ago, and I still don't remember the name. I don't remember the names of people. I don't remember, like, because it's not memorable like the other ones. But
I thought the actor who played Eric, I thought they did a good job.
See, I disagree. I disagree, and I'll tell you why. Because, and that's okay. What I was going to say, because he's so over the top, goody two shoes. He's without a flaw. One original idea. Make him into a dick in the beginning and have his relationship with Julie grow a little bit. Doesn't have to be a romantic one, but he doesn't have to be like the alpha male. I'll save you. I'll protect you, honey. You know, like that's what he is. And like they could have made him into like a little punk, and maybe they would have trained together or something. I don't know, but something other than just a guy to be on her side. It just, you know, that's another way they could have done something a little bit original, and they chose to not. They chose to just be so formulaic, you know?
Well, Gru, the next Karate Kid was, of course, critically panned, although many critics praise Hilary Swank, and it's still considered to be one of her breakout performance roles. Gru, you want to give a guess to Rotten Tomatoes, what percentage they gave the reviews based on 27 reviews?
4%.
You're a good man. 7%. With an average rating score, you want to give it a score out of 10? What was its average rating score?
2.
3.74. The website's critical consensus reads, "The next Karate Kid is noteworthy for giving audiences the chance to see a pre-Oscars Hilary Swank. But other than a typically solid performance from Pat Morita, this unnecessary fourth installment in the franchise has very little to offer." Metacritic, you want to give it out of 100? What was the score?
18.
36 out of 100 based on 12 critics.
Oh, my God.
indicating generally unfavorable reviews. Audiences polled by CinemaScore. On an A to F scale, audiences gave...
I'll say a D. I give it an F, but it's probably a D.
Do you know that according to my notes, they gave it a B plus?
What?
Doesn't the audiences usually give it a little higher than the critics?
It depends what it is. Like if it's a movie that critics are designed to hate, like a Rambo movie, yes. But if it's like a Goodfellas, you know, or like a movie you know is a great movie, usually the critics will be a little bit higher than the audience. So for this one, I guess for this one, I'm only surprised because I know, number one, I only know one other person in the world who's seen this movie, and that's you. But I can't imagine a world in which people actually like this movie.
Yeah, it's not a good movie.
But it's like, there's no, there's, there, like, if I ask somebody, I'd love to meet somebody who saw it and liked it and get the justification. Like, I'm gonna look for one of those. There must have been a couple positive reviews, because otherwise it would have had a zero rating. So I'm actually gonna look up a positive review. I want to see what they liked about it, and see what the hell did I miss? You know,
grew commercially. The next Karate Kid was by some margin the least successful movie.
Let me
of
guess.
The series.
Do you have the budget?
Domestic box office.
I want to try and guess.
Domestic box office gross.
Do you have the budget or no?
Hold on.
All right, I will guess.
No, I don't.
All right, so I will guess that it made $14 million.
You're good. You're in the ballpark. $8.9 million.
Wow, I was too generous.
Compared to $90.8 million for the original Karate Kid, $115.1 million for Part Two, $38.9 million for Part Three. So, Gru, any final depressing thoughts on the next Karate Kid?
Hilary Swank's nipples are the only thing that
may God have mercy on your soul.
That I enjoyed about this.
Gru, there is one more.
We know I'm a pervert, but that's not wrong. She was 20. I can say that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, listen.
Look at me like I'm a creep. I already know that, but I mean.
I was going to say if there's grass, play ball, but
you said that. I didn't say that.
Gru, there is yet one more addition to the Karate Kid franchise, if you will. It's the Karate Kid reboot in 2010. Andrew, when you first heard the Karate Kid movie itself was going to be rebooted, what did you think? What'd you thought, and why?
No, and one of the reasons was because when they announced that it was going that's what they were doing, they also announced that it was a Will Smith thing and that his son Jaden Smith was going to be doing it, and like, so the idea of remaking the Karate Kid I couldn't even fathom, you know, why they would do that other than a cash grab, and then to make it a Smith family, whatever thing, that makes it even worse. But then I was a little encouraged by the casting of Jackie Chan. I said, okay, here's a chance for, it's almost like casting Pat Morita. Pat Morita was basically known as kind of a comic actor, and you know, then he gets this serious role and he really hits a home run with it. Jackie Chan has always been kind of a goofy, you know, karate guy, or martial arts guy. So the idea of him doing this type of role, that's the only thing that interested me about this. Other than that, I was like,
have you ever seen Rumble in the Bronx?
Yes, I saw it in the movie theater. Actually, I saw it in the movie theater with my brother. It's a fun movie. I enjoyed that movie. I mean, His style is that always appealed to me, but I knew that this wasn't going to be that. But I like it when they do that. I like when these comic guys are challenged by a role like this. So that I was looking forward to. But other than that, why do they have to do this? You know.
Well, if I may interject, when I heard it, I just thought, why? Was there a clamor? I mean, sometimes you get a buzz on social media, hey, this might be something cool. I'll give you my thoughts on the film later, but just the pure notion of they're rebooting Karate Kid. Sometimes you don't have to go back there again. It's one too many times is enough.
Yes, 100%. I agree totally. And I mean, my thoughts, I can't really say it without giving away my thoughts on the movie. So
please don't.
Let's move forward.
All right, Gru, development, November 10th, 2008, Variety reported that a work on a Karate Kid remake had begun, Variety stated that the new film to be produced by Will Smith, as Andrew said, had been refashioned as a star vehicle for his son Jaden Smith, and that it would, quote-unquote, borrow elements from the original plot, wherein a bullied youth learns to stand up for himself with the help of an eccentric mentor. So I asked the question on my notes, do you consider Mr. Miyagi to be an eccentric mentor?
No. Not at all.
I didn't think so either.
Not at all. He was a pain from the outside looking in. He's a painfully normal guy. You know?
I never saw him nothing, as eccentric.
Yeah, there's nothing eccentric about him. There's nothing that he does that surprises us other than his training method. But
right,
eccentric
but there was
is
always,
not the word.
But there was always a means to an end. That's why I never saw him as eccentric.
Right.
There was a reason why Daniel painted the fence. There was a he had clear reasoning behind it.
Okay, so he's sitting there trying to catch a fly with chopsticks. Big fucking deal. You know, I mean,
that might be a little weird.
That's not eccentric. It's not eccentric. I do that every day.
On June 22nd, 2009, Jackie Chan told a crowd in Los Angeles' Chinatown that he was leaving for Beijing to film the remake as Jaden Smith's teacher. Despite maintaining the original Karate Kid title, Gru, the 2010 remake does not feature karate at all. Its focus is from Okinawa, Japan, but the main character learns kung fu in China. Jackie Chan later went on to say that the film cast members generally refer to the film unofficially as the Kung Fu Kid, and that he believed the film would only be called the Karate Kid in America, and it would be called the Kung Fu Kid in China. This held true in China, where the film is titled The Kung Fu Dream. So let me just take a pause here. Any thoughts about the whole karate versus kung fu focus of the 2010 film?
Yes, that was their excuse. They didn't like it's obvious that they only called it The Karate Kid because that adds – bucks, because people are going to want to go see a remake. There's no reason that they couldn't have made this its own movie. It didn't have to be The Karate Kid. It could have stood on its own merit with its own, and the story has been told a million times. There's very little different about the basic outline of The Karate Kid and Rocky. You got the young upstart. You got the old wise trainer. You know, you got the antagonist. You got the big fight at the end. It's a tale as old as time. So why not find a new way of telling it without having to connect it to the Karate Kid? That made it dead on arrival to me.
I can't believe I'm saying it, but you're spot on there. I can't disagree with anything you said. And actually, my notes have Jerry Weintraub ultimately rejected the name of the change in the title, and so I definitely agree with you. There was a cash or notoriety element to keeping the original Karate Kid name. So what I wanted to ask you was, you know, you can hit them for creativity, but I can't blame the production team for going with the known title. But looking at the title alone, did you feel like it was sort of false advertising?
It was 100% false advertising, except other than it was telling the same story, you know, just in a different setting with a different kind of martial art, you know. But
well, Gru, I had some notes on music, but we'll skip over that. Let's take a look at the cast for the 2010 reboot of The Karate Kid. Jaden Smith as Dre Parker, Jackie Chan as Mr. Han, Tajari P. Henson as Sherry Parker, Wen Han as Mei Ying, Zhen Wei Wang as Cheng, and Yu Rong Guang as Master Li. Master Li, Master Li, Master Li, Master Li.
Wasn't there like a 50 song
Andy,
called Mr. Li?
I think this is going to be fun. Let's go over the plot for the rebooted Karate Kid movies. Gru, it opens with a Little John and Usher song, and already I hate this movie. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah,
I'll tell you,
Kid.
Hey,
yeah,
I hated it. I hated it probably about 30 seconds in, and I'll tell you why.
Well, but hold on.
Okay.
Can I just add one point?
Yeah, go on.
It's the music. I'm not giving you my overall impression. I'm not a big hip hop guy. So when they started with a hip hop song,
you used
song,
to
I was
be
like,
though.
Yeah.
Didn't you used to be though?
Huh?
Didn't you used to be kind of into that?
I do like so. Yeah. So I do like. I mean, I have in my car. I have LL Cool J Rock the Bells radio. I have one new hip hop station that I barely listen to, and then I have a classic R&B hip hop station. I forget what it's called, but I do listen to it, but you know, most of my presets for Sirius are classic rock and comedy and talk kind of deals. A little bit of news.
Yeah.
All right. 12-year-old Dre Parker and his widowed single mom, Sherry, are leaving Detroit, traveling to Beijing after Sherry gets a job transfer at a car factory.
Yes,
Ray goes to a nearby.
Can I just pause you for a second?
Go ahead. Sure.
Here's what bothers me. Okay, we don't need to know all this. The charm of the original was that they didn't need to hit us over the head. This happened and this happened and this happened to bring them here. And there's one little moment when, do you remember the part where you're looking at the wall and the writing on the wall and it says like "Dad dies." You know, like, and I'm like, why do they need, like, this is basically treating the audience like idiots. We know that there's a problem. We know, and let us use our imaginations. Let us understand. Let us make our own choices. Don't tell us what to think or feel. Like, that's when I knew that this was just going to be, you know, just pandering. It's the same thing that the title does. The title is treating the audience like idiots. We don't think you're going to understand what this movie is unless we use the title that worked, you know, in 1984.
So I think the title alone was a cash grab. I think maybe you're saying the same thing.
Yeah, manipulating people to come to the theater.
Now, hear me out. Again, I'll get into my thoughts on the film at the end, but you don't think that first scene sort of sets up that the family's kind of leaving an urban kind of blight situation and moving to this strange, like, I kind of thought it was a little bit touching that the kid, he's in the van. And like his friend gives him, I forget what the friend gives him, but he gives him like a skateboard, I think, or something like that. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, pandering, but.
Well, I guess, all right. I guess you're right in a way, but you can't walk into this movie. It's very difficult to walk into this movie. And I did see it in the theater. I did. You can't walk into it without, because of the title, without comparing it side by side to the original.
Don't disagree.
So that's why it doesn't work. But if this is its own movie, if this is its own thing, that works much better. Because I'm thinking about, like I just said, they didn't need to show us everything. What was unsaid and untold was more powerful. We were wondering, why this move? Why are they going to California? What happened to the father? We want to have that ambiguity. That's what keeps us asking questions about these characters and their motivations and why they're doing what they're doing and why they are the way they are. Why does Daniel have this edge to him? Why is he a little punk? He's got some anger to him.
Okay, but here's the thing.
You know? Yeah,
let me refocus.
Go ahead.
Let me refocus you.
Go ahead.
Are you saying that you would have preferred the 2010 version to have had the Dre and his mom already in Beijing?
Yeah. Only because it just feels like a carbon copy.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have the scene where Dre goes to the nearby park. He catches eyes with a young violinist, Mei Ying, who reciprocates his attention, a 14-year-old Chinese boy named Cheng, who is a rebellious kung fu prodigy whose family is close to Mei Ying, holds a grudge against Dre, and he brutally attacks him, teasing and bullies Dre every time he gets the chance to, and their encounters are particularly brutal and physical. And again, whether you like the movie or not, I did think, I don't know if brutal is the word, but it was, they beat that boy up pretty good.
Yes, they certainly did.
Thank you, Andrew. Your insight is intoxicating.
Well, they did. And, you know, but by then, and I, you know, and I admit it, and when I rewatched it recently, I felt the same way. By then, I was already out of it. I was already not.
All right. Well, then look, here's, you know, my, I mean? Here's my thing. I'm just going to go to it. You made a point about, here's my thing. There's nothing that I, the film did nothing wrong. I think it's very much hurt by the Karate Kid title and the implication. Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you. There's perhaps a different movie there, but I found myself as I'm watching the movie, I liked all the performances. I thought, Jaden Smith was good. I thought Jackie Chan actually was pretty darn good. I don't know if I'm going to give him amazing, but I really enjoyed his portrayal of Mr. Han. And Tajari P. Henson has the lockdown, for lack of a better word, urban, suburban mom, you know, who cares, who's loving, but a bit frenetic. She's got that role locked down. So, you know, when the movie concludes, I said to myself, I didn't dislike it. Enjoyed it to a level. It does not, it does, you know, the Karate Kid stuff. No, there are some stuff I'll criticize about the movie, but I think ultimately it was hurt by the Karate Kid title and the implication. I didn't think it was a terrible, like the next Karate Kid's a bad movie. Yes. It has no budget. It's hokey. The performances are okay. I thought everybody did the acting was good. I think there's a Disneyfication of the Karate, you know, like he's leaving Detroit and he's got to, you know, they got to kind of contrast urban to this new land and it's a bit pandering. But beyond that, I thought it was, there's nothing I can say that I hated about the movie.
I actually agree with you to a point because you're right.
Wow.
Wait a minute.
Hold on. Can I say something?
Yeah.
I'm really shocked because all of your earlier comments were like, you were literally, like, I think we've spoken and you're like, it was disgusted.
Yeah.
And so when I watched it, I found myself saying, it's not terrible. It's not a bad movie.
No, it's not. And the performances are good. But the problem is, and yeah, it's well made. And Jackie Chan, I give him even more credit. He was terrific.
And I actually agree. I didn't want to you had the guts to say it, but I thought Jackie Chan did a really.
Yes.
I don't know. Listen, I don't know all of Jackie Chan's work. I've seen a few of his movies.
He's never done this
before.
The limited
stuff I saw, I thought his acting was the best I've seen in this movie.
Yep. He did, you know, basically what Pat Morita did. He defied all expectations. But again, if you're going to make a note for note remake, you're going to suffer from comparison. So everything that the Karate Kid 2010 tries to do, you're going to compare it with how the 1984 Karate Kid did it. And there is no comparison, and you can't get away from that. That's why if they just distance themselves, I don't buy that the cash grab. I mean, I know it was a cash grab, but I don't buy that people wouldn't have come to see it. You know why? Because Will Smith was the biggest star in the world at that time. Even though he wasn't in it, he attaches himself to something at that time in his career. It's gold. So you don't need these tricks, these manipulative tricks to get people to walk in a theater. But if you're going to say, okay, this is a remake of The Karate Kid, then guess what? It's going to be compared as such. And comparatively, they do that everything that they try to do that the original did, they do it badly. Comparatively. But if it's a completely different thing, a different movie, they do it fine. That stuff with the jacket, it works. compared with Wax On, Wax Off.
All right, so let me give you where I thought it was a little hokey. Actually thought that jacket thing was hokey. It's no different. It's a note for that's no different
than
the original.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but one of the biggest moments in movie folklore is that scene in the original when the audience and Daniel realize that he's been training this whole time. That novelty is gone with this one.
Right.
It's, you know, that turning point, which was a huge turning point in the original, that's all gone. So I don't, right. So I actually go back on what I said. I said it worked. You know what? You're right. It doesn't. Why did they should have just abandoned it. They should have just said, okay, you know what? We're not going to be able to recreate this and surprise the audience. So let's either come up with something different or just stick to straight kung fu training.
So I guess going into viewing, I thought I was going to see a piece of horse crap. And I did not think – I got to be fair. I did not think that. First of all, I think the movie is it's a gorgeous movie. It's well shot.
Yes.
Well directed. The acting is great. Hokey, fire cupping, Mr. Miyagi's, these kind of things. I didn't like the I was mystified by the whole Mr. Han with his family death.
That was forced.
He's crashing his car. He does it every 10 year, every 10 once a year. Like I know tortured people and I know of families that have had, you know, major tragedy, but it just didn't, I've never known anyone to do that. It came across.
Yeah. And they're going with that same trope from the first one, how he lost his wife and son. Why not make him somebody who never had a family? Why not make him just a true loner who just can't connect with anybody, never has, and all of a sudden he's got this kid who needs him and he sees a whole different side of himself. That's a layer to that character that they could have had, but you know what? They took the easy way out. Let's take what they did in 1984 and do the same thing here. We'll just make it instead of being drunk on his wife's anniversary or on his anniversary, we'll have him in a car and tell him the story straight out, basically telling the audience that this guy's wife and son died. But, you know, they could have done something different and made the character even more tragic by having him have someone who's never had a family. And all of a sudden, he's got one. That, to me, works so much better than just repeating the formula.
Yeah, they do touch upon what you're saying. There is a scene, I think they're on the train, and Jaden Smith falls asleep on Jackie Chan's lap, and he looks uncomfortable, like he's never had a kid who feels comfortable next to him, and he kind of...
All right, Andy, because now I'm lost. The power went out in my house.
Really?
Apparently a breaker flipped, and I was without power, a little puppy, and my girlfriend Marie. And so we are now back up and running, talking about 2010 reboot of
you blew
the
a
Karate
you,
Kid.
You blew a low. And, I mean, you blew a fuse?
We literally blew a fuse. So listen, I'll just summarize.
You blew a fuse.
Some good discussion. Again, I felt like there was a good movie there, the 2010 reboot, you know, and that it definitely was weighed down by the connection to the Karate Kid. There was a couple of wonky things. I think I was going to go over that before we hit technical difficulties, but again, you know, some of the things you talked about, you had a really good point. You know, I mentioned again, Mr. Han does the muscle memory with having the young, try to take off the jacket, put it on.
Right.
And you made a good point of, we've seen that before,
Yeah. And before it was like a surprise and now we knew exactly what he was doing. But wait, before I forget, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Like, you know, you listed the Karate Kid as the original as one of your favorites ever. and it's definitely one of mine, but here's the thing. We can still watch that movie and we can watch the ending and we can still catch all the feels from it all these years later. Agreed?
Agreed.
Even though we've seen it hundreds of times for 30 something years. If it had never existed, okay, if that movie had never existed and this Jaden Smith Karate Kid 2010 thing were its own animal, would it have the same kind of staying power? Would the end of that move, of this movie, hit us the way, or in at all, even close to the way that one did?
Okay. So first, my first point will be specific to the movie. Young man who, I never bought into Dre, the young man who plays the antagonist, the bully.
Yeah.
He's so much more physically bigger and imposing. I had a hard time at that ending tournament, even buying in that, Dre, Jaden Smith could defeat him in a kung fu. Now, to your point about if this was a standalone movie, Karate Kid never happened, would it have the same effect on me? No. For a couple of reasons. Number one, I'm older. I mean, I'm just trying to be honest here. I'm older. I'm a little bit more cynical. I think my reaction would have been fairly similar, which is a nice movie, a Disney-fication. It sort of has that Disney, it kind of plays around the edges. It's not too edgy. I would have said enjoyable movie. You got 2 hours, to kill and you want to see something that's going to hold your attention. Yes. But would it have the result of The Karate Kid? No. I mean, I was a changed young man when I left the theater after The Karate Kid.
Yeah, but even today, I've watched the original with a very close cynical eye, because I'm older and cynical as well. And it still fires on all thrusters, and it's just like at the end when he's getting ready to do that crane thing, the stakes couldn't be higher. Everything that we've just went through for the last 2 hours is in this dude's foot right now, as it were. I didn't get anything like that from the new one, regardless of where the other one came. Because when you see like Johnny in the first one, all right, or in the original, he's a three-dimensional character. You see him. My brother and I disagree on this. I don't think you hate him. My brother disagrees, but I don't think you hate him. I think he's the antagonist, but you see him as, a misunderstood kind of rough around the edges kind of guy who got his girl taken from him, and he's fighting back, and he's a pain in the ass and all this stuff. So you're sort of with him on that mat as well. This other guy in the new one, it's 10 years old already, but in the new one, you just don't, there's nothing there. There's no dimension. I mean, that's what I get from it.
Okay. So a couple of points. Number one, I hated Johnny. I'm going to go on the record. I disagree with you that.
Okay.
I mean, William Zabka was the go-to blonde bully in the 80s. So let me just, I do remember the redemptive moment, but overall, no, I did not like Johnny at all. Now, to your point, look, here's what I'll say about it. You had kind of prepped me. You had let me know without getting into details that you did not like the 2010 movie. I had not seen it. So when I sat down to watch it 2 weeks ago, I was expecting a pile of dog crap, and I was pleasantly surprised by the performances. I was pleasantly surprised by the cinematography. I thought it was a beautifully shot movie. It didn't hit the mark as the original. We talked about for a variety of reasons why it didn't. But alone, it's not a bad movie. That's my point. And I thought Jackie Chan was really phenomenal in this movie as Mr. Han. It was a nuanced performance. I'm not a big Jackie Chan's filmography. I don't know what frontward or backward, but the stuff I saw, I mean, he really had some acting depth there, and I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, is that a, on my end, a fair statement to say?
Absolutely. And I think I've said the same thing. On its own, it's not a bad movie, but on its own, it doesn't hold a candle to its predecessor.
Guru, was anyone crying for a Karate Kid reboot? I mean, I don't think so. Let me ask you a question. You know, all these reboots that come and go and fail, is it, you know, you had your hand in Hollywood for a while. Lack of creativity, lack of scripts. What's going on here? I mean,
I think
Karate Kid needs to be rebooted.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because it depends how you're going to do it. I understand the idea of taking these great, you know, you got to remember the 20th century was the birth of movies and that kind of storytelling. All right. So to take these formulas that worked so well and try to adapt them for today's younger audiences is perfectly fine. You know, you just got to do it right. So to speak to your point, what they did with the Karate Kid, starting with not even making it about karate, and doing it, you know, the way they did, is juxtapose that against what they're doing, and it brings us to where we're going next week with Cobra Kai. That's an example of taking that formula and truly adapting it in a completely new but old way, if that makes any sense, because they don't rely heavily on, I don't know how to put this. Let me switch gears for a second. Let me go to Star Wars. Okay. They were making these new Star Wars things. And to me, the reason they didn't work is because people are going to see these things because they want to see the old guard. They want to see Harrison Ford. They want to see Luke Skywalker. They want to see, you know, these people return. And basically what the Star Wars movies did was this is going to be a triple metaphor. It's like when the WWE had Roddy Piper walk Sean O'Hare to the ring, trying to put Sean O'Hare over using an old guard. That's kind of what Star Wars did. They said, okay, we got these old guys around for the fan service to sell us on the new people. That's not what Cobra Kai does. Cobra Kai, it's still about Daniel and Johnny. But because it's still about them and what they care about, we care about what they care about. So that's why the new characters that they've come up with are so well developed and three-dimensional. For some reason, they've done Cobra Kai the way that these things should be done.
Well, as usual, you had a great point, but let me just boil it down for everybody. I mean, when I saw, we'll discuss this a lot next week, or our next show, but when Cobra Kai came out and, you know, I started reading about it, where can they really go with this? And so that's an avenue of creativity because I agree with you. It's still at core about Daniel and Johnny, but all of a sudden now you have families, you have businesses, you have children, and the way they've creatively woven that into this universe is really awesome, very creative. And they've taken a second look at some old stuff. And now that you're older, now that I'm older, I'm suddenly looking at something that I looked at when I was 11 and 12, and I was so damn sure that Daniel was good guy. And now all of a sudden I'm like, I don't know. And that was, I think, the first thing I said to you, which is, to quote Billy Joel, there's a lot of shades of gray there. And I thought it was pretty darn cool, but I don't want to go. I don't want to.
But I just want to add one thing. Okay. About Cobra Kai. Ahead. It has hit in that younger demographic.
Oh, yes.
And in my opinion, that's because of how they've done it. And, and I'm thinking of other things like the movie, The A-Team. Did you see that?
Yes.
What did you think of that? I enjoyed it.
The A-Team movie is, It's a mildly amusing popcorn movie. Nothing less.
And so is the Karate Kid. And so is the Karate Kid 2010. Because I enjoyed the A-Team. I completely made it separate from the TV series. And I did enjoy it. Does it need a sequel? Absolutely not. Fine the way it is. Fun time. A little bit memorable. Just like the Karate Kid 2010. You know, like I said, I don't hate it. It's not a bad movie. It's just unnecessary. And maybe the A-Team was unnecessary.
Well, let me give you my final thoughts on the movie. I'm looking at my notes. Okay. I wrote, Gru, there's a good movie in here, a good movie about how an adult and a child could help each other overcome trauma. The movie is beautifully shot. The acting is top-notch. The problem is it's a reboot of The Karate Kid, a reboot that no one was clamoring for. I like the movie. It's a competent, enjoyable movie, but is weighted down by The Karate Kid expectations.
Yeah, that sums it up. Well, perfectly.
Your enthusiasm for my work is palpable.
Oh my God, I can't believe you said that. That was amazing. That's exactly what I was thinking. You know, I've been trying for 2 weeks now to come up with the perfect summation, and you did it in 30 seconds.
Well, I bow to you. You're such a pop culture fan that. Look, I have like 15 pages of notes. Gru just goes off the top of his head. He's like, he's Benji.
I am Benji Bronk.
Gru, what was the overall reception and critical response to 2010 Karate Kid? Well, Andy, I'll throw it to you first. On a 100% scale, what do you think Rotten Tomatoes gave 2010 The Karate Kid?
I'm going to say it was somewhere in the 55 to 60% range.
Now listen, guys, the people that listen to this podcast, this is why Gru knows his stuff. It got an overall approval rating of 66% based on 208 reviews. Andy, out of a scale of 1 to 10, what was the average rating given to 2010 Karate Kid?
Is that the audience?
That's through Rotten Tomatoes as well.
I would say 1 to 10. I'm going to say 7.
Yeah, based on critical reviews.
Oh, critical. I'm going to say 5.
Okay. 6.17 out of 10. Okay. The site's consensus reads, it may not be as powerful as the 1984 edition, but the 2010 Karate Kid delivers a surprisingly satisfying update on the original. Gru, Metacritic, another review aggregator, out of 100, what do you think it got out of 100? Assigned a weighted score out of 100 based on 37 critical reviews.
I'm going to say 65.
This guy's on par, 61 out of 100. Great job. Actually, you'll be surprised. The audiences polled by CinemaScore gave the film an average grade.
I think the CinemaScore audience was higher because I remember people, especially the younger people who went to see this movie, they liked it. Because they're not carrying that weight into the theater that we did. So I'm gonna say they gave it a 7 or an 8.
A to F scale. What would you give? Give it a letter grade.
Me personally or them?
No. What did Cinema Score?
I'm gonna say at least a B.
See, this Andy knows the stuff. They got an average grade of A, actually, A to F scale.
I'm not surprised. Younger people liked it.
Usually CinemaScore, they scored a little higher than the critical reviews because, you know, I think fans are a little more – viewers are a little more forgiving perhaps than the critics.
Yeah, and in fact, it's interesting because you'll either laugh at this or hate my guts, but, you know, every now and then I would – you know, on a special day, I'll show my class an episode of Cobra Kai, and they got so into it. And because of Cobra Kai, they went back and watched the old Karate Kids, and they realized that the new one that they liked so much was not good. Before they had seen Cobra Kai, they were like, oh, man. And when I mentioned Karate Kid, they're like, yeah, that was awesome, man. Jaden Smith is the man. Dre, yeah. And I'm like, no, hold up. Relax. Take it easy. You know, I'm telling them that's not what this is. And then, you know, because they see where it came from, they kind of realize that okay, it's not anywhere near the quality of the originals, But yeah, people liked it. When it came out, people did like it.
Clearly, to our Florida listeners, Andy's students will score very strong in the Karate Kid segment of the test.
Of the FSA, FSA. They'll do very well on that EOC.
I don't know who Alexander Hamilton is, but Mr. Miyagi is letter C. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times gave 2010 Karate Kid a positive review, rating the film quite high, 3.5 out of 4 stars, calling it a lovely and well-made film.
It stands on its own beat. You want to know why? You know why I find that real interesting? Because I used to buy those Roger Ebert books with all of his old reviews in them.
I never bought them, but if I was in like Barnes and Noble,
yeah, you'd sit there and read them, right? Sure. I used to get them. It was, you know, he's, you know, rest his soul. He was a great movie reviewer. Not I don't even call him a critic. I call him, he would really go deep in. And The Karate Kid was one of his favorites ever. Like, it was on his top 10 of the year it came out. Like, he gave it 4 stars. Like, so I would expect him to not like this one that much, but respect, you know, with all due respect, you know, he was able to separate the two better than I was, which is why he made so much more money than I do.
Claudia Puig of USA Today and Owen Gleiberman of Entertainment Weekly each rated the film a B, with Gleiberman saying the chemistry between Jaden Smith and Jackie Chan grounds the movie, imbuing it with sincerity and poignance, and that the film is fun and believable. Imbuing. You seem to have a vocabulary trend here on the show.
It's very nebulous.
What was the box office for The Karate Kid?
I am going to say the box office for The Karate Kid 2010 was 140 million shekels.
U.S.?
U.S.
Okay, let me give you the synopsis here. Film was released on June 11th, 2010 by Columbia Pictures to just under 4,000 theaters across the U.S. Karate Kid topped the box office on its opening day, grossing $18.8 million, beating, as Andy referenced, The A-Team.
Really?
Which had grossed $9.6 million. Closed on September 18, 2010, grew after 101 days of release, grossing $176.7 million in the U.S. and Canada, along with an additional $182 million overseas, for a worldwide total of $358 million on a moderate budget of $40 million. So grew, based on my math, almost $360 million on a $40 million budget. Which sounds pretty strong to me.
It is.
So I did ask, why does this feel like it's generally discarded at best a mild win in the reboot world?
I think maybe because it didn't break any new ground. Enjoy, like all the reviews said, they're all
You're
hovering.
Frozen.
I am. Evan
now
says I'm frozen. I'm good now. I'm good now.
Please, no more technical difficulties.
Oh my God. But what was the question again? What was the question again?
Well, it seems it made a lot of money.
Yeah.
It did make a lot of money.
Right. And, you know, but everybody's view of it is kind of in the B to B plus area, which is not, that doesn't have much staying power. You know, the movies that have staying power are the ones that stay with you, the ones that knock you out, like the original Karate Kid, like the original Rocky, like those kinds of movies. This one, I guess people look at it and says, okay, not bad. Was it necessary? No. If it was better, and you could say, yes, it was necessary, they broke new ground. They went places that the original couldn't or didn't. You know, then you have something, but they didn't really, like, we use the jacket thing as a perfect example. They're basically just repeating something from the original where they could have done something different. And
that was my question to you.
Yeah.
That was my question. 'Cause, you know, when you have the jacket, the fire cupping,
Yeah.
Even the final fight between Dre and Chang, where Dre uses there's that technique he sees in the old with the it's like a Japanese poem that Mr. Han taught him.
Yeah.
You know, they go back to the well quite a bit from some of the big pieces from Karate Kid. And I was just going to ask you, had they not done that and maybe tried to do something a little bit more creative or a little more original, would that have reflected a little bit better of your
definitely
on your opinion on your opinion of the film?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's my biggest complaint is that if you're going to do that, find something new to tell. Be a little creative and don't just retell the same exact story because you can look. The story of these movies is all the same. It's all Rocky, you know, and even Rocky is based on, the underdog comes from nowhere and triumphs over, adversity. That's a tale as old as time. And, but you got to find new ways of telling it. That's why I think this movie kind of cursed itself by even calling itself The Karate Kid. You could remake something without giving it the same title. Happens all the time. I'll give you a great example. The movie Heaven Can Wait. You see that? Remember that?
Yes.
That was a remake of a movie called A Guy Named Joe. But everybody knew it was a remake, but it was a different title because they wanted it to have its own life. They could have done that here. They could have made it The Kung Fu Kid. No big deal. Why? Why did they have to marrying it to The Karate Kid hurt it? That's why it doesn't have the staying power that it could.
I think if they would have called it The Kung Fu Kid, it would have gotten picked apart for, it's almost like Godzilla and Godzuki. Like, they would have got picked apart if they...
So call it Dre and Han or something. I don't know. Whatever. Come up with something,
You did mention Dre and Han. I mean, I did find one or two articles about a potential sequel. I think by now it would have been realized. I mean, we're going 11 years now. So
well, actually, it's interesting you say that because the studios are the same, and Will Smith, who was the brainchild, I use the term loosely, behind this remake, is a producer on Cobra Kai. So this might be that there might be some connection there.
Have you seen real quick the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion on HBO Max?
I saw that. I enjoyed it.
So did I.
I thought it was very tasteful. I thought it was very. I liked the old Aunt Viv coming back, and
that was the best part.
That was very nice. Very honest.
I was thinking you don't get much honesty anymore in Hollywood, and that was a pretty shockingly honest.
Oh, I wanted her to slap his ass right there. That would have been great.
But. Oh, stop it. Okay.
No, but yeah, it was really, really well done. I liked it.
Last couple of things on Karate Kid 2010. Let's see, Jackie Chan won a People's Choice Award in 2011 for Favorite Action Star. He won, Favorite Butt Kicker in the 2011 Kids Choice Awards, and the movie had several nominations for the MTV Movie Awards and Teen Choice Awards and did not win. So, Gru, that would wrap up the best of the rest. The next Karate Kid 2010, the Karate Kid reboot. Gru, final thoughts and anything else you'd like to muse on? The floor is yours.
Yeah, I just want to, I sort of held my nose going into this because these are not my favorites. But I have a new, in listening to everything that you said, I kind of have a new sort of appreciation for the reboot. Next Karate Kid will stay exactly where it was, and that
yes,
is
I agree. Next Karate Kid
in,
is
in the crapper.
I'm not going to call it a pile of dog ass, but it's pretty close.
And I think the people who made it would also. I mean,
and I think again, I'd like to just say I was peppered going into it. Really, your feedback and a lot of people's feedback are these are not two good films. And I'm not saying again, 2010 was It's not an Academy Award winner, but I was surprised as how much I liked it. It held my attention. I don't know if like is the correct word, but because I'm, it's compared.
Well, like
to,
you said, it's not a bad movie. It's not.
Yeah.
Next Karate Kid is a bad movie.
Oh.
and the only thing, I mean, like the only thing I was looking forward to in revisiting that is because I could, it's like, you can watch Miyagi do anything, but not in that. Like,
yeah,
I was really like,
it falls into parody.
Yes.
I think you should really come clean. The two reasons you wanted, the two biggest reasons you liked the movie was Hilary Swank's breasts and navel.
Yeah, her two nipples were my favorite parts of the movie.
Well,
remember, guys, remember everybody, she was 20 years old. All right, she might have been playing a 16-year-old, but she, I got to, you know, that's creepy. She was 20 years old. I looked it up.
I mean, if you could only see what we would talked about 20 years ago, and now we have to caveat everything.
Well,
it's so sad. It's so sad.
We have so much to lose, don't we?
yeah, I guess. All right, Gru, that is it for the Karate Kid, the best of the rest. Next week, we're going to go to the Cobra Kai Season 1 Roundtable.
Yes.
We will break down, we'll discuss the beginnings of Cobra Kai, the formation, filming, background, all that good stuff, and then we'll get into Season 1. I remember Andy excitingly calling me and saying, you got to watch this television show on YouTube. I didn't even know. I wasn't even aware of it. Did some research and read about it, and certainly looking forward to it. Andy, want to give us a preview of what you're looking forward to, Season 1 Cobra Kai Roundtable.
I just love talking Cobra Kai. I mean,
you got to see the look on his face. He's actually smiling on Zoom while he's discussing Cobra Kai.
It's like, it's, I don't know, just like, I love it when shit just works. You know, when something you're looking forward to just exceeds your expectations. How many times does that happen? You know, like, look, we'll get into this next week, but, you know, when I first heard about this Cobra Kai idea, like Danny and Johnny, you know, 30 years later, I'm like, all right, that'll be a nice parody. It'll be funny to watch, fun to watch, but, you know, it'll be silly. And it was anything but. They took it seriously. And the only thing I can compare it to was my reaction to like Rocky Balboa, which was like not so, like you would say that and when it was being made and everyone was like, oh, enough already, you know, it's gonna suck. The last one sucked and like, how could this one be good? And then you go see that one, you're like, wow, it probably could not have been better. It exceeded expectations and I just love it when that happens. And this is the case with Cobra Kai.
Yeah, I have to echo Andy's thoughts. When I went into it, I was hopeful, similar to Rocky Balboa. I was hoping, and then when I've watched it, I was saying to myself, "Yeah, they struck gold, and there's a lot of good stuff there." You're going to be honest though? Will you be critical if it needs to happen?
If it needs to happen, yes. But I have to be honest with you. I've been trying to find things that, you know, I've binge watched both seasons at least three times each since they've come out.
God.
Yeah. You know, there's not much, I mean, it's been a pandemic, so why watch anything new, you know? But it's hard to find, there are a couple things, but it's very difficult to find anything. It's near perfect, if not completely perfect. You know, I do have a couple things that I will give you that I think could have been just maybe a tad different or maybe a little more developed, but not much.
Well, I'm hopeful. On my end, they just announced on Hulu FX will be doing an Alien television series.
I saw that.
It's going to be helmed by the writer for Fargo, the TV the show of Fargo. So I'm actually very excited for that. But next week it will be Season 1 Cobra Kai Roundtable. And Andy,
with
you want to take us out of here?
With surprise guests. We're not telling.
Possibly, yes. We will, yes. We'll put a little something on our Facebook, get that back up and running. And
yes,
looking forward to season one Cobra Kai round table.
Yes. So we apologize for the technical glitches, but we came back stronger than ever. There is no shortage of stuff for us to talk about here on Nothing Worthwhile. So we look forward to seeing you next week when we discuss the legend that is Cobra Kai. So until then, 1, 2, 3.
Rip-a-rip-a-bomb. Quack, quack.